Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to tell you that you can permanently, radically, and forever transform your relationship to food without ever going on another diet, without ever counting calories, carbs, or fat grams. The key is to change your relationship to yourself. It is not what you are eating that is the problem. It's what's eating at you. And when you get to those root issues and get rid of them, you are liberated for life. So I would love to hear from you what's eating at you or whatever is going on in your mind, in your heart. The number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, let me know what's weighing on you and let me try to lift the burden. You'll be surprised on how that affects your relationship to food. So last week I started talking about binge eating disorder, which many people have. Many people suffer from binge eating disorder, the most common eating disorder there is. But most people don't know that they have it. They think they lack willpower. They think they need more control. They think it's a character flaw. It is not a character flaw. Oh, hold that thought. I have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Is this Dr. Nina?
This is Dr. Nina.
Hi there. It's Nicole. How are you doing?
Hi, Nicole. I think you've called before. I think I've talked to you before.
Yes, I have. You're so good that you remember. I just love your show, and I found your response to be so helpful last time, so I wanted to call in with another question.
Okay. What's your question?
So I'm just a little confused about the difference between emotional hunger and physical hunger. And I just want to learn better how to know the difference so that I know how to respond to my body and whether I'm.
Oops, I just lost you, Nicole. Nicole, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Somehow we just lost our Skype, so you got cut off, but. If I understand the question correctly, you are confused between the difference between what is emotional hunger and what is physical hunger. How do you tell the difference? I imagine is probably where you were going with that. So this can be tough. People often say to me, you know, how do I ever tell the difference? If I listen to my body and eat intuitively, my body's going to tell me to eat pizza. But that is not the case. So how do you learn the difference between physical and emotional hunger? Here are some signs that you're physically hungry. One is it's physical, right? Your stomach is growling and gurgling, or maybe you feel lightheaded. Maybe you have a headache, especially if you haven't eaten in a while. So when you're physically hungry, you feel it as something physical. And when you are physically hungry, anything is going to sound good to you because you just need to get food into your system. So it's not when you're really starving, you're not going to be like, no, I don't really feel like that. You're going to feel like, okay, that's food. I need it now. Let me have it. So that's when you're physically hungry. When you're emotionally hungry, the sign of emotional hunger is something sounds good to you, something looks good to you, or maybe you want to reward yourself, or maybe you want to calm down, maybe you want to feel better. Oops. Hold on, I'm having some. Okay, sorry about that. So when you're emotionally hungry, what you're doing is you're turning to food to change the way you feel emotionally. And so when you do that, you want to ask yourself, okay, what is it that I'm trying to resolve through food? If you're trying to resolve a something psychological, a feeling, an emotion, something like that. If you're trying to resolve something, something that's in your head or your heart and the way you're emotionally feeling by eating, that is your sign that it's emotional hunger. And by the way, that's why I then created my food mood formula, because lots of people know they're turning to food maybe for emotional reasons, but they don't know what's going on inside because they've gotten so used to turning to food to resolve something emotional that sometimes they go right to food. They don't even know they're being triggered, right? So the food moon formula, very briefly, and I talk about this way more in other shows, and this is a lot of the basis of my online program. Basically, here it is. If you're turning to smooth, creamy foods like ice cream, something smooth and creamy and, you know, just makes you feel good, that is a sign that you need comfort. So ice cream, frozen yogurt, pudding, that's a sign that you're needing comfort. And if that's what you're going towards, then you want to ask yourself, okay, how else can I comfort myself? What else can I do that's going to make me feel good? And for the answer to that, think about how you talk to your friends or maybe your kids. Like if they need comfort, do you say, wait, I have just the thing. Here's some ice cream. This will really help. You know, probably not. You probably talk to them. Probably say, or maybe give them a hug. But you talk to them and you say, wow, you know, tell me what's going on. You got to be a friend to yourself and respond to yourself with language. The second in the food mood formula is filling bulky foods. So if you find yourself turning to, for emotional eating, turning to pizza, pasta, bread, cake, you know, things that really fill you up, that is a sign of either loneliness or emptiness. So if that's your go-to food, maybe you want to think about, well, what's going on with you right now? How are you lonely? The answer to loneliness is to talk to another person. If no one is available, the answer to loneliness is to be there for yourself. And that's the difference between loneliness and solitude, right? Loneliness is you're just got that horrible, yucky, awful, lonely feeling. Solitude is when you have that feeling, but you then show up for yourself and with yourself. And that way, you respond to yourself with words instead of using food. And the third one, the third in the food mood formula is crunchy. So anything with a bite, it's usually chips. You know, usually people are like, I just have a thing for chips. I can't stop eating Cheetos. Well, that means there's some anger that you probably need to express. And often people who eat crunchy foods or other foods get mad at themselves for eating or for whatever they weigh, instead of then like recognizing that they're actually mad at a situation or a person, and they're directing that anger towards themselves for eating. So if chips are your thing, ask yourself, if you couldn't be mad at yourself for eating chips, if you allowed yourself to express your anger in words, who or what would be making you mad? Who or what would be upsetting you? Very, very important. So, Nicole, I hope that answers your question. In short, physical hunger is physical. You feel it in your body. And emotional hunger is to resolve something that doesn't feel good emotionally. And when you are physically hungry, anything is going to do the trick. You won't be like, I don't want an orange. I really need pizza. You'll say, an orange sounds good because I am starving. So that's how you know the difference. Now, here's just to throw a little wrench in things. Oftentimes when we experience yearnings, think about our language. Like we say we're hungry for love. We're starving for affection. We're starving for attention. We use the words for food that we use for love and relationship. And sometimes when we have those yearnings, a yearning for a fulfilling relationship, for example, we can feel it as physical hunger. So not to complicate things, but also take a look at like, okay, if you weren't hungry for food, and this is for people who are just hungry all the time, and they know they're eating enough, but they just can't get full, and they've been to the doctor, and they know that they don't have that disease where you can't get full. when you think about, okay, what am I hungry for? See what the answer is. Be curious, not critical, and you'll be a lot more likely to find answers. So last week I started talking about how binge eating disorder is the most common eating disorder there is. And most people who have it don't think they have it. They don't know they have it. They think that there's just something wrong with them. They think they lack willpower. They think there's something wrong with their character. They think they're lazy. They think all kinds of things, right? They're wrong. Binge eating disorder is an emotional disorder, a way of coping that ends up hurting you as well as it helps you, because it does help you in some way. It helps you numb, escape, distract from uncomfortable feelings. But binge eating disorder is treatable. So if you have the signs of eating disorder, which is regularly eating more food than most people would in a single setting, feeling very out of control while you're eating, and this happens at least twice a week for 3 months, and there is shame involved, very important. Some people eat a lot, and they're just like, I was hungry, or oh, that was just really good, whatever, I'll eat less tomorrow. But people with binge eating disorder feel incredible amounts of shame when they eat. And shame is the sense that there's something wrong with you. Whereas guilt is the sense that there's something wrong with what you're doing or what you're not doing. So binge eating disorder is treatable. So how do you recover from binge eating disorder? I'm going to give you some tips. Of course, it all has to do with changing your relationship to yourself. Right? It doesn't have to do with food. Food is the solution to the problem, actually. It is not the problem. It seems like the problem, but really it's your way of coping. It's your way of dealing with what's truly going on with you. So first of all, here are some tips from me and also from recovery warriors. First of all, give up on diets. Diets do not work. 95% of people who lose weight from diets regain it and often regain more. And if you don't believe me, look at the people from The Biggest Loser. I mean, this is an extreme example, but if you look at the people from The Biggest Loser who lost extreme amounts of weight, or people who've done bariatric surgeries of one sort or another, like my wonderful guest from a few weeks ago, Kelly Gunter, she lost 243 pounds because she thought weight was the problem. She thought that dieting or losing weight would resolve the problem, and it did not. All she did when she lost weight, and so many people have this experience, is realize, oh, wait, I still feel the same. I'm just thinner, you know? And so diets don't work just from a physical perspective. Diets change your metabolism. There have been many, many, many studies. Again, the $60 billion diet industry does not want you to know what I am telling you. They do not want you to know that diets don't work. The $60 billion diet industry wants you to think that diets work, and if one doesn't work, well, they're just going to try another one. So diets have a 95% failure rate. They mess up your metabolism because when you eat fewer calories, which most diets make you do, whether you call it a diet or a meal plan, make you eat fewer calories. You eat fewer calories, your metabolism goes, oh, there's fewer calories coming in, let's become more efficient. And then when you go off the diet, now your metabolism is more efficient, meaning you need fewer calories. Now it's easier to gain weight. Isn't that totally so messed up? You lose weight, but it makes you gain weight more easily. Ugh, that's horrible. And the other reason diets don't work is that diets are about the anticipation of deprivation. And the anticipation of deprivation, which is, oh, I can't eat that thing that I really like until I lose X many pounds, so I'm going to be deprived, so I better have a lot of it right now. Diets always lead to binging. And most importantly, diets deal with what you are eating. What you are eating, they do not deal with what is eating at you, right? And That's the whole point, right? Diets are like, going on a diet is like pulling weeds and expecting them never to grow back. You don't have to be a gardener to know that when you pull a weed, it's gone for a little while, and eventually it will grow back because you've got to get to that root. And I love this analogy because the root is underground. It is hidden, just like we have hidden thoughts, feelings, wishes, things that are unconscious, underground within us that affect so much of our behavior. It's out of awareness, hidden, but not out of operation. So the other recommendation is step off the scale. In fact, I recommend throwing the scale away. Don't give it away because nobody needs your scale. Nobody needs to weigh themselves, truly. And people are like, oh no, I can't lose my scale. Like I'll just blow up. I won't know. Like I'll be gaining weight and I won't realize it. I'm like, no. You won't. A scale should not be dictating your self-worth, which it does for so many people. I hear all the time that I got up in a good mood and then I went to the bathroom, I got on the scale and my day was ruined. Totally ruined. Really? Because of a number on a scale? A piece of metal and plastic should not have that much control over your self-worth. So get rid of the scale. In fact, on my YouTube channel, The Dr. Nina Show, a few years ago, I did a video where I like smashed the scale. Like I took a hammer to the scale and I just smashed it. It was so gratifying and wonderful. And by the way, if you're angry, that's a good way to express your anger other than chips. So smash your scale, toss your scale, step off the scale. The scale is not your friend. It's just not your friend. Third recommendation is stop trying to be perfect. You can only be perfectly imperfect. There is no perfect. Voltaire said, perfect is the enemy of good. Kind of brilliant, right? Perfect is the enemy of good. Striving for perfection often means you make no progress at all. Because you can't be perfect. And so you try, and then you mess up. Inevitably, you do, because you can't be perfect. And then you say, well, that's it. I ate perfectly until 4 o'clock, but then I ate cookies, so all is lost. I might as well have the rest of the box, right? Striving for perfection makes you go into that black and white kind of place where it's either all or nothing, either no cookies at all or all cookies. So I like to say that in between black and white is not shades of gray, because we can't actually use that phrase anymore now that those books and movies are out. Shades of gray has a whole other meaning. So can't say shades of gray, but think of it this way, which I actually like better. Think of it as between black and white is a rainbow of color. A rainbow of color, all different kinds of thoughts and feelings and wishes and levels of achievement and attainment and whatever. Live in the rainbow. Don't be all or nothing, because there is no all or nothing. In our life, we actually are in the rainbow. So when you embrace the rainbow, you're going to be a lot happier. When you hold yourself to some standard of perfection, which does not exist, repeat, does not exist, sorry, doesn't exist, you're just going to feel bad about yourself. And then when you feel bad about yourself, you are more likely to use food to cope, because you have to get away from your own mean voice. If you're telling yourself, oh my God, I was doing so well until 4 o'clock and then I ate cookies. What's wrong with me? I'm never going to lose weight. I suck. Ouch, right? That doesn't feel good. But and that's where you eat more cookies because you want to drown out that voice. But when you change the way you relate to yourself, you eat two cookies and you say, okay, you know what? That's perfectly imperfect. I'm good with that. Those were good cookies. I enjoyed them. Now, on with my day. You don't end up beating yourself up, feeling bad, and eating even more cookies to feel better, which a lot of people say, it doesn't make sense. Why would I eat more cookies when I hate the fact that I ate the first cookies? Well, it's not logical. It's psychological. Okay? So keep that in mind and be gentle with yourself. No perfect meal plan, no perfect diet, no perfect weight, no perfect person, including you, no perfect job, no perfect anything. When we think about our friends and our loved ones, we don't go like, wow, I love them because they're so darn perfect. She dresses perfectly. He behaves perfectly. No, you love them because they are the people that they are. And what makes them lovable is actually their quirks and their imperfections or their, you know, what is perfect anyway? How do you define it? All right, food for thought. Also, figure out what you're feeling. Because if you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. Okay? If you're turning to food, if you're going to the fridge, if you're going to the drive-thru, if you're going to the pantry, and you're emotionally eating, that means you're trying to get rid of or distract from something uncomfortable. What is it? Again, keep in mind my food mood formula. If you're going for ice cream, you need comfort. If you're going for bulky filling foods, you may be feeling lonely or empty. And empty, which I didn't talk about earlier, empty is the sense of like something's missing in your life. You know, it may not be friends, it may not be people, but it may be just some sense of dissatisfaction, some emptiness. You may not know what it is, but you feel it. Rather than using food to symbolically fill that emptiness, ask yourself, what is it that's making you feel empty? What is it that would be fulfilling in your life? Notice again how we use language to talk about both what we want, who we love, and also how we feel when we eat. So interesting. So sometimes people say, well, I just get in that zone and I that urge to binge is just so powerful and I can't not do it, right? This is where you have to really fight. At first, you have to fight. You have to really think. First, you got to think, why am I eating? Oh, I'm eating this. That means that. But then you got to really work hard. I'm telling you, it is not easy. It is not easy to do this. But once you do it, your binge issues or your eating issues are gone forever. That's why I don't even like the word recovery. Sorry, recovery warriors. I don't like the word recovery. I like the word liberation. Because you don't want to wake up for the rest of your life going, okay, I'm going to be good and I'm not going to eat that. That does not sound like a way to live. What sounds like a way to live is, this is what I want to do with my day. This is what I want to do with my life. I'm not going to be dictated by the scale. And if I want to eat something, it's not the end of the world. I haven't done something wrong. I haven't been bad. So here's how you fight the urge to binge. Think about, these are all D's, four D's: delay, distract, determine, decide. So delay, postpone eating for 3 minutes, 3 minutes. When you feel that urge of, I've got to do it, I have to do it, there's no stopping me now, I must do it, just go, okay, wait, I can do this for 3 minutes. You can do this for 3 minutes. Like, often the recommendation is 10 or 15 minutes. No, 10 or 15 minutes is an eternity. It's like a lifetime when you have that feeling. So I say 1 to 3 minutes. 1 to 3 minutes. You can do this for 1 to 3 minutes. You're not saying that you're not doing it. You're just delaying it. And what you tell yourself is, you know what? I'm going to give myself permission to go to the kitchen, go to the drive-thru, go to the pantry, whatever, go to my secret stash of whatever, and I give myself permission to do it in 1 to 3 minutes. So that's one thing you can do. Then distract. Give yourself something else to do. So that you're not just sitting there like, okay, has it been 3 minutes yet? Has it been 1 minute yet? Can I do this now? Just, you know, do something else. Even if you walk around the house or put on some music. These are distractions, healthy distractions from, you know, that 3 minutes. And do this outside of the kitchen or wherever the food is, right? If you're going to distract yourself, get yourself away from the danger zone and just give yourself 1 to 3 minutes to do whatever, but just anything but to keep you from just going, okay, can I do it now? So then the third D is determine. So first we had delay, then we had distract, now we have determine. And this is where you're going to determine, are you physically hungry? Are you emotionally hungry? Or are you, this may surprise you, are you thirsty? Are you tired? So many people think that they are hungry when they are thirsty. Because often when we are babies, we are, you know, we cry, and some parents go, oh my gosh, what's going on, baby? Are you tired? Are you hungry? Are you thirsty? Do you need a hug? And parents will try to determine what cry belongs to what resolution. But often parents equate crying with hunger. And so the baby's crying, baby might be hungry, but baby might also be thirsty or tired or something else, needs a hug. But the same response is given, food. And that's how we learn early on that anything that's uncomfortable should be met with food. Now, this is not against parents. Parents do the best they can given their situation, but sometimes their best can fail us or hurt us. Nothing against parents. I'm sure I'm guilty with my girls of doing the same thing. I mean, we all do it because, right, we're not perfect. But so sometimes when you think you're hungry, you've given yourself 1 to 3 minutes, you've distracted yourself, and now you want to determine, am I thirsty? Am I tired? A lot of people will eat something to perk themselves up. I was tired, so I ate a candy bar, and then I ate another candy bar, and then I ate another candy bar. Well, the answer to being tired is not a candy bar or anything else that you put in your mouth. The answer to being tired is to, if possible, rest. Just rest. The answer to thirst is not food. It's drinking some liquid. So try to determine, you know, what is really going on. Are you physically hungry? Are you emotionally hungry? Are you eating to perk yourself up? Are you eating because you're thirsty? What's going on? Are you eating out of emotions? And then the last D is decide. 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 Do you really want to eat this? Is it really going to help? And if you absolutely must eat it, like some people say that they just cannot not, once they start eating something, they can't leave it. Like if they open up the family size bag of chips and they just have a few, somehow they tell themselves, I'm just going to have a few and then more and then more. And then before you know it, the whole bag is gone. So I say, get yourself some individual size bags of chips, right? You know, and then eat the whole bag. If you absolutely decide that you must have the food that you need, if you say, yes, I know I'm eating my emotions, but I don't care, I have to do it, then limit it. Don't binge. Eat some of the food, but just eat it in a way that is not overeating it or binging on it. Prepackaged single servings are the key, right? Really, really helpful. And last, remember that wanting to binge doesn't mean you're going to binge. Feelings are not facts. Feelings are not facts. Just because you feel some way does not mean that that is actually happening. Feeling rejected doesn't mean you're rejectable. Feeling like you've got a binge doesn't mean you have to act on the feeling. Wanting something does not mean you're going to take action. So remember that. And remember that when you are craving something, it's usually the result of something that's going on in your environment, whether your external environment or your internal environment. That's why if you still watch network TV, which, thank you, Netflix, I haven't watched network TV in forever, so I haven't seen a commercial in forever. Thank you. Anyway, but I remember watching commercials and they would all be food. And of course, what do people do when they see a commercial for people eating chips or Jack in the Box? They want that food. So the power of suggestion. So there might be something in your external environment that's making you feel like you want that. The other thing that, that commercials do, especially around the holidays, which we're coming up on, is they present families sitting around a table having a wonderful time, happy, happy families. And sometimes when we see families like that, we can feel really bad because if we don't have a family like that, if we don't have that picture-perfect Hallmark holiday family life, it can make you feel really bad. And if you don't know how to respond to yourself, if you don't know how to nurture yourself, then you're vulnerable, again, to using food for distraction. So that's where you want to look at, okay, what are the underlying triggers? If you're feeling triggered, what's going on? Are you upset? Are you sad? Are you mad? By the way, all feelings can be distilled down to four basic feelings: mad, sad, glad, and afraid. Mad, sad, glad, and afraid. So you, like anxious would be afraid. Frustrated would be mad. And you can figure out the rest, right? So really try to determine what is going on. What are you feeling? And then you relate to yourself like you would relate to a friend. Again, if your friend was upset, would you say, oh, here, eat this. Have these chips. This is going to really do the trick. Don't think about that. No, with your friends, I'm guessing most people are like this, that with your friends, you're different than the way you are with yourself. So many people are one way to their friends and the people they love and another way to themselves. So the key here is to be the way you are with others. Do unto yourself as you are to others, right? So if when your friends are upset, you are available, you talk to them, you reassure them, you acknowledge them. Remember my acronym, VARY: validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself. So treat yourself as you treat your friends. And here's some common things that people feel. Loneliness. If the answer to loneliness is to reach out to another person. So even if it's 2 a.m. and other people aren't available, there's usually someone online, someone somewhere you can find. Join my Facebook group, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community, because we've got people all over the world there. And no matter what time of day you feel anxious or triggered or lonely or whatever, there's usually someone around because they're in Europe, they're in Africa, they're everywhere, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, of course. That's even one way where you can reach out and connect with other people. And there are groups like mine all over the place. Also, if you're anxious, here's what doesn't work if you're anxious. Someone saying, oh, just calm down. Just calm down. It's okay. That doesn't work, right? You're like, I'm anxious. I'm anxious. My heart is pounding. I'm anxious. Then if you are anxious, then you have to do something to calm your body down. And that's not words. But what you can do is do this thing called the progressive muscle exercise. Progressive muscle exercise, that's what it's called. And what you do is you tighten your muscles, like even if you just do your arms, like you could tighten as much as you can, like you tighten, just really, really as much as you can for as long as you can. And then when you relax, it's like, oh, you can totally feel it, right? That's how you relax. And then relaxing your body leads to relaxing your mind. If you're bored, now boredom means you need something to do. If you're bored, then you need to do something, right? Boredom means do something. But often we confuse boredom with emptiness or loneliness. So if you truly are bored, go and do something do an activity of some kind. If you are actually lonely, again, you know what to do. I just talked about it. And then there's also asking, just talking to yourself, you know, why are you lonely? What's going on? What do you think about yourself? Some people are like, I'm lonely and I have no friends because clearly there's something wrong with me. If I were a better person, if I were a likable person, I'd have friends. No. If you don't have friends and you're lonely, that doesn't mean there's something wrong with you, right? So try to identify the underlying meanings about yourself to all of these feelings that you might be having. Because it's just easier to beat yourself up. Remember Pretty Woman? You guys see Pretty Woman? There's this scene where Julia Roberts goes something like, why is it always easier to believe the bad? It's true. I'm not sure why that is, but it is true. We have to catch the bad thoughts we have about ourselves and challenge them, okay? If you're lonely and you think that means there's something wrong with you, then you're going to feel bad about yourself, and then you're going to, you know, bury your head in a vat of ice cream because that's unbearable. But if you say, I'm a good, likable person, there's nothing wrong with me, I just haven't met my people, or I'm shy, or, you know, and that doesn't mean there's something wrong with you, that just means you're shy. Lots of people are shy. So just question the negative thoughts and ideas that you have about yourself. Again, also try to suss out, are you exhausted? Are you sleepy? Are you thirsty? Because using food to perk yourself up when you're tired is the wrong response to exhaustion. When you're tired, you need to rest, and food is not going to perk you up for long. In fact, usually people have coffee or they have something sugary, which spikes their energy, and then boom, they crash harder than ever, and then they feel worse than before. So your body needs your rest, not food. And, you know, I talked a little bit about loneliness and how you can reach out to people. And I just want to stress the importance of community, because we need our tribe. We need our people. We need our supporters. We need people who are going to celebrate with us when we have successes, and also, you know, comfort us when we have setbacks. So again, friends, family, people in online communities, check out Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community. Find them, use them, stay connected. Because when you turn to people for comfort, you're a lot less likely to turn to food for that purpose. Remember, at a core level in our psyche, food represents people. Why does it represent people? Because our earliest experience of being fed is being a baby, hopefully in someone's arms, right? Held, rocked, fed. So that the experience of being fed is bound up with the experience of being held, being soothed, being related to, you know, a parent's eyes, looking at the baby, the holding of that baby. So a baby feels held and related to, in addition to just getting its nourishment. And that's why in our psyche, food represents people. But people can be unpredictable, unavailable, and unreliable, which is why often it's easier to turn to food, which is predictable. It's predictable. You're never going to have a bite of chocolate ice cream and have it taste like turtle soup. No. It's available 24/7. You can get it wherever you want. It's either in your house or it's down the street at the 24-hour 7-Eleven or wherever. So it's predictable and it's available and it's reliable, right? It doesn't change on you. It's not going to, you know, not be there when you need it. And that's why we often turn to food instead of to people. But when we can turn to people and feel safe and feel supported and nurtured and heard and understood, then we're a lot less likely to turn to food. So We have fulfilling relationships, satisfying connections. We're hungry for love. We're starving for connection. We need people. We need people more than we need food. Okay, so here is a question from Janine in Malibu. She says, I feel totally powerless over food. I have no control. Janine, I hope you heard the earlier part of my show. I feel totally powerless over food, says Janine. I have no control. What can I do other than dieting to keep me in line and reach my weight loss goals? Okay, Janine, here's the thing. Just because you feel powerless over food doesn't mean you are powerless over food. But when you're feeling powerless, constantly thinking about what to eat, or just, you know, or maybe just you just need a little help, there's a different solution than willpower and dieting to help you reach your goals. So often we feel powerless over food because some stressor is leading us to eat, right? Again, if you're turning to food, you're turning away from something else. So if you're eating when you're stressed out, sad, scared, whether you're mad, sad, afraid, or even glad, and there's a reason for that too, which I'm just about to explain. If you're turning to food because you feel something you don't want to feel, you know, you're turning away from that feeling. So there are two kinds of ways to deal with uncomfortable feelings. One is to directly address them, and two is to distract yourself in a healthy way. Here's why being happy is also a trigger. I remember many years ago, someone's relative told them after something bad had happened to them, and their relative said, "Well, you were so high up, I was just waiting for you to fall." Like, oh, things were just going so well, it was too good to last, right? Too good to last. So often we equate happiness as some kind of setup, like, oh, if we're happy, we've somehow stepped onto that rug of happiness that's going to be yanked out from under our feet, and then we're going to feel really stupid and bad. So don't trust happiness. It's just a setup for bad. That's why happiness can actually be a trigger. People feel really happy, like, ooh, this is good. I got what I want. Okay, what's going to happen next? Right? Where's the bad thing going to happen? Where's it going to come from? And that's because we humans make patterns. I'm getting a message that people are trying to call and they're unable to get through. So if you're trying to call and you're unable to get through, I apologize. Hopefully my engineer Ronan will help out with that and get us our callers, because I know you guys want to call in. So again, there are two ways to deal with feelings. One is to distract from them, and one is to express them. So distractions are actions that take you away from yourself. Eating is a negative distraction because it causes you more harm than good. It's a frenemy. I'm going to say this all the time. It's the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. So more on that later. So when you binge or overeat, right, you get into that zone. You get into that zone of like, okay, I feel nothing. It's almost like remote, not remote control. What's the expression I'm thinking of? You're on automatic. You're just on this zzz. You're in this zone and you can't stop. And that's because you're taking yourself away from what's painful or scary, right? So eating keeps those uncomfortable feelings at bay for the moment, for a little bit, but eventually you just feel worse. And you may be temporarily distracting yourself from the stressful situation or the scary situation, whatever it is, the uncomfortable situation. But you end up beating yourself up afterwards and then feeling bad about yourself. Oh, here I am. My collar is, this is working. Let's cross our fingers. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago. How are you?
Hi, Brian from Chicago. Hi. Welcome.
Had a little trouble getting in, so I'm glad I was able to get the call through.
I'm glad you were.
I have a question for you, just kind of about, I'm not sure what to call it other than just the ambient anxiety that is the world right now. I have a number of female friends, and unfortunately, like so many women, a lot of them have experienced some degree of, you know, sexual assault or harassment or just, you know, toxic guys who make them feel incredibly uncomfortable all the way up to worse. You know, at some point in their lives, it really is kind of like just alarming how often that seems to happen. And they are all feeling extremely triggered by the Kavanaugh hearings and just the tone and tenor of this president and his supporters. And so I guess my question is, what's your advice to somebody who basically they're being triggered by things that are that far out of their control? I mean, you know, it's one thing to feel triggered about something that's happening in your life, but when you're talking about something that's on the news or in the papers or online, or you get a text alert from CNN and immediately it's, you know, link here for this video of Trump being incredibly hateful. And all these things are triggering. So what do you tell people who are just getting triggered by just stuff that's happening right now that they don't have any ability to completely insulate themselves from?
Great question, Brian. I only have a few more minutes. And for those of you who are watching on Instagram Live, the question from Brian from Chicago is, what do you do when you're triggered by situations like what's happening in the news in the United States right now with the Kavanaugh hearings? It's triggering a lot of people to feel a lot of anxiety and helplessness and powerlessness, maybe because they too were assaulted and this is reviving feelings, or maybe just because the situation is making them feel helpless and powerless. So the short answer, and I will talk about it more next week because I'm about to run out of time. The short answer is you have to honor what you feel, and it doesn't matter if something happened years and years ago. Often people say, "Why are you as a psychoanalyst so care so much about the past? Like it happened years ago," and I say, you know, It doesn't matter that it happened years ago. What matters is that it's affecting you now. We're actually looking at how the past is in the present. And so if you are feeling powerless and triggered and helpless, helplessness and powerlessness are two of the worst feelings that people can feel. And by the way, often people feel helpless over food, but then over situations, and then turn to food, and then displace their helplessness over the world situation, and put it on food. I have no power and no control over what I'm eating. Look at how out of control I am, because you can ostensibly change that. Versus, I have no control over who's going to be the next Supreme Court justice, and I have very big reservations about the person that they're trying to put in office. I'm scared. So if you feel triggered, if you feel frightened, if you feel scared, if you feel helpless and powerless, you have to honor that and recognize it. Remember that as awful as it is, you're not always going to feel this way. Think about the steps you can do regarding whatever the situation is that's making you feel powerless. There may not be something, but there may be. Recognize that if you feel it, it needs your attention. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. Whoops, I'm almost out of time. Doesn't matter when it happened. Wounds don't heal unless they're healed. So if something happened 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 5 years ago, doesn't matter. If you haven't healed it by processing it, by working through it, you are still going to feel it. Time does not heal all wounds. And you have to heal that wound so that you're not so easily triggered in the present. So hopefully that answers your question, Brian. Really good question. Wish I had more time to talk with you about it. but we are out of time. So thank you so much for being here today with me on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. If you missed the show today, if you're listening on, you wouldn't have missed it if you're watching right now. But if you are Instagram, watching it on Instagram Live, and you want to see any playback, it's also available on Apple Podcasts and anywhere that podcasts are found. If you want more information or free stuff from me, I have it on my website, which is new website, Dr. Nina Inc., DrNinaInc.com. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next week.